Get that tape ready.
Tonight, I'm happy to introduce Rob Schmidt, Taiyi meditation teacher and one of the founders of Many Rivers Books and Tea. He has been teaching meditation now for 30 years?
35 years.
And Stuart Goodnick, another meditation teacher at the Taiyi Meditation Center and another of the founders of Many Rivers Books and Tea, and a tea, what do you call it, tea genius.
Tea aficionado.
Tea aficionado, extraordinaire. So,
tea genie.
Tea genie. That's the word.
That's right.
Tonight, they're going to be talking about the Festival of Conscious Parenting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. So, I thought I'd start by talking about my teacher's introduction to me about the idea of conscious parenting. And for him, shortly after I met him in 1977, I started hearing about his own training by his spiritual teacher. And perhaps the most important part of that training was his stint as nanny to his spiritual teacher's oldest three children. That was an extremely formative period for him in his own spiritual development. And over the years, my years with him, he was absolutely clear about the crucial impressions that he received during that period. So actually, I'd like to dedicate this talk tonight to him in his memory, because this Festival of Conscious Parenting that we're going to be discussing is really, in many ways, a culmination of a lot of his own work, a lot of his dreams and his own intentions, and his understanding of what spiritual practice offers, what spiritual practice consists of. And so, and it's my pleasure to dedicate this talk to him tonight. So, I've just said that he was formed as a spiritual practitioner by his interaction with children. His responsibility for being with the children of his own spiritual teacher. And he also had a huge focus, and this store, Many Rivers Books and Tea, is itself a manifestation of that additional focus, which was to bring the, I don't know if the phrase, the art of conversation is quite right, but he wanted to bring the appreciation for conversation between various spiritual traditions to our Western culture. Because it wasn't the sort of thing that that you see very often, and in fact, even to this day, it's maybe not as common as you might think. So here I am, the product of my work with this gentleman, whose spiritual training was informed so deeply and strongly and intensely by his work with children, and his own experience with getting in conversation with practitioners from other traditions. So, I've been going along for all these many years, attempting to pass on what I received from him and what I've been given from other sources as well along the way. But earlier this year, I was in the midst of a very powerful seminar given by Landmark Education. And in the midst of that seminar, I had a moment where I said, and this is part of an exercise, you could say, but it was an exercise that I had not done before, And that exercise resulted in me saying very powerfully, from nothing, I am now the possibility of children growing up in nurturing, loving contexts. And that statement resonated very strongly for me that day, the next weeks, and about a month later, I found myself in a new context where I was being asked to create a community project of my own devising. And so I narrowed the possibilities that I was interested in engaging in down to two. And one was to create a meeting of spiritual practitioners, a conversation among spiritual practitioners here in the North Bay area of different traditions in a way that hadn't been done before. That was one instigating motivation that I could follow. And then there was this other thing that had been resonating so strongly for me. This intention to create the possibility of enabling the creation of nurturing, loving contexts for children. All children. So eventually I came to the conclusion that I could actually combine these two. I didn't have to choose between them. And the way it could work is that I could create a meeting of spiritual practitioners, a conversation of spiritual practitioners across disciplinary and tradition lines, and create that conversation with a particular focus. Before that, in my imagination, I hadn't imagined the a particular way to organize the conversation. But I realized, actually, having a focus for a conversation can actually deepen conversation. So the Festival for Conscious Parenting, Festival of Conscious Parenting, was born, or the idea for it was born out of that. And it consists of two parts. The first part is that conversation among spiritual practitioners. And I have some flyers, although I didn't apparently place them where I meant to place them, but I will grab them before we break up for the evening, that describe this project coming up in just 2.5 weeks on Sunday, July 15th from 2 to 6 p.m. in our backyard in south of at Tayu House, south of Sebastopol here, where we will engage in conversation across tradition lines, the lines of spiritual traditions, lines of spiritual disciplines, in service of the creation of the bigger goal, which is the Festival of Conscious Parenting, to take place sometime in June 2013, which will be a weekend event consisting of two basic parts. One will be a Saturday devoted to bringing discussion of and sharing of techniques for conscious parenting among adults. So we'll have, and I'm not sure who yet, but that's in process, and part of the things we'll be talking about at the July 15th meeting upcoming. We'll have some big-name authors, I have no doubt about that. Big-name child advocates, people who have been working at this for years, if not many decades. Speaking in a plenary session to a large number of people from the general community. And then in addition to that, to those venues, we'll have breakout groups where various practitioners of spiritual traditions will share the techniques for conscious living that those techniques and that those traditions have been building and maintaining and extending for, in some cases, millennia. We'll be sharing those with people who may have little or no exposure to those ideas, techniques, etc. And on Sunday will be a day for both kids and adults, where we get to share with kids the techniques of meditative and spiritual practice in ways appropriate for kids, fun for kids, including things like body work with a meditative focus, martial arts with a meditative focus, parades, storytelling, sitting meditation, walking meditation, etc., etc. It's been amazing the amount of stuff that I've been discovering that people have already been up to in many areas, toiling away in their own individual fields here and there, that will be incredible to share with a wide audience of people who are hungry to create this context of loving nurturance for kids in their own lives. Now, one of the things I want to make clear is that this is not focused only on parents, nor even on grandparents. Although that's one of the, that's one of the breakout groups that we already have a volunteer speaker for, that is conscious grandparenting, on the probably on the Saturday afternoon. But we envision this as being an opportunity for every adult who has contact with kids, and that is pretty much every adult, to learn how to make sure that we bring nurturing, loving contexts of our own manifestation to our interactions with kids. My own experience as a child is that I had a very, very, I'd say, typical middle American, middle class upbringing. And while that was wonderful in many ways, both my parents, I think it's fair to say, were exposed to contexts where at some point, they lost hold of the security of knowing that they were loved for who they were without any qualification. And it's not because their parents meant to convey that sort of thing, or the adults that they were in contact with meant to convey that sort of impression. They might have lost their tempers. They might have said something that they thought was the appropriate thing to say because it's what their parents said to them, as their parents had said it to them, etc., etc. So one of the things that that I myself was exposed to, therefore, was a sense that I needed to justify my existence in a certain kind of way. And I think that most of us growing up in American culture have that that sense of something missing or something needing to be filled at the core of who we are. And conscious parenting, as I'm defining it, is a way of relating to children such that we are less likely to create those effects in the children we interact with. We are more likely and are committed, in fact, to creating the loving, nurturing contexts wherein children we'll never, especially in those formative first couple of years and beyond, less and less, but especially in those first years where children will not question, that the universe loves them, will not question their own basic connection to and security within the embrace of love of human beings and more than human beings around them. That's what conscious parenting, in my view, can help create, can help establish. Not at an intellectual level. We're talking about at a much more basic level. It's not that kids won't have obstacles. It's not that parents and kids, or adults and kids, or kids and kids won't have disagreements, won't have arguments, won't have anger, won't have all the things that come between us in the ways that they come between us. But when the principles of conscious parenting are enacted, are committed to and enacted with integrity and determination, then the experience of children, I'm arguing, and this is an argument, and you see that book, Conscious Parenting, over there, the picture of the baby's face on the front there. I'm taking a leaf from that gentleman, Lee Loswick, who wrote that book as well. And saying, along with Mr. Loswick and my teacher, Robert Ennis, that when children are exposed to that kind of impression food early on, consistently, then their experience of life is colored, is informed, and derives from that impression food, which is different than most of us experience. Not that we didn't have wonderful experiences and wonderful love from our parents, grandparents, families, etc. I'm not denying that. And I get that people want to be loving, nurturing human beings to children and to one another as adults. Of course we do. Of course we do. But the world would not be in the state that it's in today if we were as good at it as we might be. As good at it as it perhaps as some traditional cultures used to be before conditions changed and the support for people acting in loving, nurturing ways towards kids changed, evaporated, moved on. And now we have new conditions. So our challenge is to act on those, is to take up those challenges and recreate loving, nurturing contexts which won't just affect the children, it'll affect our lives too. Because if we can be loving and nurturing in the face of a child's need, we can be loving and nurturing in the face of the needs of other adults around us as well. Well, there's more I could say, but maybe this is a good point for me to either stop and ask for questions or let Stuart jump in here.
Well, let's see if there are questions first.
Okay. Comments, questions?
I was asking Carl if there are any writers today or experts who have mm-hmm. replaced the Dr. Spock school of parenting, which is what I was exposed to mm-hmm. as far as bringing up my own children, which is largely out of favor now.
Mm-hmm.
Largely
out of favor.
Out of favor.
Dr. Spock is out of favor.
Dr. Spock is out of favor.
Got it.
But I don't know who has replaced him because I'm not in the parenting business any longer of young children.
Oh, there's all kinds of stuff out there. There's different theories and trends. There was a cover of Time magazine just a few weeks ago, and the it was about one of those trends, and the headline was something like, "Are you a good enough mother?"
Oh, I saw that cover. That was
that's a good one to set people off.
Cover.
Right. So
that's a good one to turn people off.
Precisely, and that's. But that may have been part of the point of the provocative headline and cover. But the point I'm making is that there are lots of people
theories,
out there.
A lot of theories going.
Right. You know? One of the nice things about this book, Conscious Parenting, is that it's not based just in theory. Actually, this is a way of interacting with kids that was enacted at the by the spiritual community that Lee Loswick was the head of, and still exists. And in fact, one of the people who I hope to have at the not at the July 15th meeting coming up, but at the big event in June of 2013, is the editor of that book, who Regina Sarah Ryan, who also has been the head of child rearing or child raising at the Arizona ashram of Mr. Loswick, one of the locales where this was. Where these principles were worked upon.
And curiously, she herself doesn't have children, right. But she does have lots of children in the sense that she, as a practitioner in her community, she took on being the head of the essentially child rearing services and activities within the ashram, and so has great exposure to many of these principles.
Right. And as far as I can tell, she surely has expressed a deep felt gratitude, profound gratitude for those experiences, because what she gets out of that work herself is at least as much as she gives, or so she reports. And I completely get why she would feel that way. But the issue of fads in child rearing is actually you know an interesting one, and it's like fads in many arenas of human endeavor. There have been fads in lots of areas of popular culture, and in lots of areas of
fashion.
What's that?
Fashion.
Yeah. Fashion, absolutely. All kinds of things.
Could I make a comment here?
Absolutely.
One of the distinctions that's useful in looking at what distinguishes conscious parenting and the vision of conscious parenting from some of the developmental methodologies for parents that are available, after Dr. Spock, you know, the modern day equivalents is. Gets at the heart of a distinction and that describes spiritual practice in general. And our teacher Robert Innes used to say that spiritual practice was not about a what, but about a how. And in the sense of what he meant in terms of practice, you know, it's not what you put your attention on, what you do in your life, what the details are, it's how you do it. With what kind of attention are you doing it? With what kind of presence are you doing it? And that distinction I found very useful in terms of the vision of conscious parenting, because many developmental models and guidelines for parents are all about the what you should be doing with the child, you know, whether it be...
Or what you shouldn't be doing with
the child. What you shouldn't be doing, this, that, and the other. And the vision of conscious parenting that's... certainly articulated by Lee Loswick in that book, more focuses on the how. How should we be? How is it? What is our presence with our children? What is our How do we hold our attention? How do we engage? How do we confront factors in ourselves that may be mechanical or automatic that we haven't explored in such a way that we don't necessarily impose them or propagate them on the impressionable minds of young children? And that puts the focus in a different place. So it's not, and that's why I see how it differentiates itself from a fad, in the sense that fads are typically about the latest what. Hows tend to be more persistent or more eternal, in the sense of, you know, how am I being with my child? So a principle of, like one of the principles that comes up in that book is focuses on the importance of not shaming a child, but that tends to me to be more of a how than a what, because it comes up in so many different contexts. No matter what we're doing with kids, you know, it's a way of being as opposed to a particular activity or practice that you're doing with a child. So, in a sense, conscious parenting, as we envision it, is something that moves beyond, you know, a developmental philosophy, and it more becomes a condition for practice. One of the interesting discussions that has come up in some of the steering committee meetings that we've had, where we have different spiritual practitioners, some leaders of communities involved in this project, is that many of the spiritual traditions that are we have access to in the West, and this is true of Christian traditions, it's true of Buddhist traditions, and on and on, were born often in monastic contexts, where the presence of children and the issues associated with children were not really focused on as central or dealt with. And in fact, because many of these traditions arose in societies where, you know, you basically had a prescribed path in life, which was to grow up, get married, raise children, and propagate the family, someone going into spiritual practice is actually doing something very radical and moving away from that. So a lot of the spiritual technologies that we have, the spiritual practices, the ways of moving our attention, holding our attention, deepening our presence, all exist in contexts where kids weren't present. And one of the lovely things that's happened in the West is that because of the nature of our society and the kind of the mixed roles that different people have, all of a sudden it's come to the fore that the presence of children in the context of spiritual practice is a real question for some practitioners. How do they practice? How do they do their intensive deep meditation when they have two-year-olds running around? Jim, did you have a question or comment?
I have an observation to make that there are two spiritual traditions which have no monastic component. One of them is Judaism, which has never had a monastic component. And in fact, in some parts of Jewish tradition, you can't enter into more advanced practices unless you are married. That's mm-hmm. actually a requirement. And the other is Confucianism. And the Confucian classics, like The Great Learning, for example, talk a lot about family and the primary family relationships, you see. And I'm just wondering if I guess I'm observing that those traditions might have something to offer, from their long history. It would be hard. Confucianism hasn't really landed in America, but still, I think it might have something to offer.
Well, there's one person who was actually. He's sort of a scholar of Confucianism, but actually tries to bring it into his life. And he's spoken here at the store, and our colleague on the Mystical Positivist radio show, Nick Egan, actually interviewed him on a show when Stuart and I were in Japan just recently. And so I'm going to definitely be inviting him. He lives in Petaluma, so it should be hopefully a possibility. Him to come. So on that score, I think that would be a great. It would be great to have his perspective. Number one, and number two, there's at least one recently ordained rabbi, woman from our community, our Many Rivers community, who is excited about coming. So we'll have at least her perspective, and hopefully more from the from Judaism as well. But in fact, she's going to be. I'm thinking of her name is Judith Goldman, and she's going to be giving a talk in August here at the store. And it's actually a series of talks, and one of them is about family life, I believe, or marriage or family life, or some combination of the two. I don't recall off the top of my head the exact title, but that'll be interesting.
Who is the man?
Actually, Danielle had his. His
okay.
Oh, okay. Who's
the man?
I'm forgetting his name, but
Adam.
Yeah, Adam something, but I don't recall.
Starts with a G.
But we'll you can find it. Have you uploaded that to? Oh, okay. Well, you won't be able to find it yet on Mystical Positivist. However, it is. He did give a talk here,
and it is on our website.
And it is our Mystical Web. Excuse me, our Many Rivers Books archive.
I can find a link for that if for you.
I don't recall being here for that.
It was a while ago.
Year or two, not that long ago. You might have been out of town or something. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking of one of our members of the executive committee, you know, the Native American.
Trina Vega, right.
You know, that's considered a tradition, you know, a Western tradition. You know, and I'm.
A good example of that, of a non-monastic
right.
tradition. Yeah. And she's. She's now got, so far, three members, I mean, including herself, there's three members of her, just this week, she's had three members of her extended family working on this project. I mean, she just jumped in. She's got her set. She's got kids and grandkids, and she's got her son came over yesterday and did a video to do it, so we could do a YouTube video. And then her sort of adoptive daughter who lives with her, Anna, who you've met, has been doing social media for the event, so Facebook, created a Facebook page and stuff like that. Yeah.
I just was thinking about how I was, the frame of mind or lack of consciousness mm-hmm. when I had my children, which mm-hmm. was a long time ago, but. Boy, I had my daughter in the old traditional hospital setting, and I remember looking at her and thinking, oh my gosh, now what?
Exactly.
And I was really glad for some really practical Dr. Spock or any, you know,
sure.
Magazine article or anything that would illuminate. And, you know, I learned after a while that I actually did have natural instincts about some things. But, and also, I did not grow up with a really great family.
Mm-hmm.
That was my personal experience. It was
right.
middle class,
mm-hmm.
and in California. But my orientation was more about what I didn't want to repeat, as opposed to mm-hmm. what I did want to do. And so there wasn't a sense of vacuum of
mm-hmm.
what I did want, but I knew very clearly the things I didn't like, I didn't want to shame, or I didn't, you know, I didn't
mm-hmm.
want to do those things. And, but I didn't feel I had a sense of community support
mm-hmm.
for those kinds of thoughts and questions
right.
and worries and feeling so inadequate and all those things. I just hope that whatever it is that you're putting together is going to really meet the practical reality of where people are and lots of different places that people exist in terms of past experience and what they're facing with their family. I have a daughter who's in a master's program. Her husband works two jobs. They're busy, really, just surviving. And I think she would love this. And I'm not sure, you know, how do you make room for that? To grow, because she would be very attuned to it, but it's like, okay, it's time to get dinner, you know,
mm-hmm.
get the kids off to whatever.
Well, thank you.
I mean, I'm just bringing up really down-to-earth, practical things that I'm sure what you're talking about embraces too.
Well, thank you so much. You've brought up a whole list of things, and I want to address at least some of them, because there's some great points there. The point about practical life, that's why we want to have these breakout groups, because they will be people will be able to choose and focus on things that are meaningful to them, in addition to some inspirational discussions that where people maybe have their eyes opened at least a little bit to some possibilities they might not have even considered to have existed. Then what we want to do is have these things where people actually have experience on the ground doing things in their lives that they can share with other people, techniques and so forth, that they can actually share. So to me, there are these two components. There's the inspiration first to create enthusiasm around the project it's great actually to have enthusiasm just around not wanting to repeat the mistakes of the past, and it's even greater to have enthusiasm about creating something positive to put to insert into your life, into the lives of the children that you interact with,
and acknowledging
right.
These could be really new ideas.
For many people, there are, and that's the whole point. That's why we want to have. I mean, one of the components is to have a big media presence to let people in lots of different conditions of life know about the possibility, so that they can come and find whatever's useful or relevant to them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One of the additional. It sounds like we have mice buffed there. but the other, you made another point, and I just want to bring it up that I just had a conversation on Tuesday night with someone whose his community project in this seminar that we're both taking is to bring midwifery back into common practice, and not have it be this sort of thing. It's become, over the last generation, it's become an option for people who pursue it themselves.
Exactly.
But it's not really mainstream yet.
No.
And his view is that his project is to create the context where it becomes a mainstream alternative, along with the usual hospitalization kind of model for childbirth. But along with that, his view is it would be cool to have to bring an awareness of conscious parenting to everything that's happening along with this process and through this process before the actual birth of the child. And even to, and that's it's addressed in the conscious parenting book that I'm talking about, even to the act of conception, and what parents bring to that, or might be able to bring to that, or if that's no longer, if that bridge has already been crossed, then to the question of what kind of mind do the mother and father wish to cultivate while the child is safely within the womb, more or less safely within the womb, physically, perhaps. But we know there are increasing numbers of studies that show us that there's all kinds of things happening in the exterior environment that are affecting, including the emotional lives of the mother and the people she's interacting with, that affect the developing child. So it's so I wanted to acknowledge that we have people interested in participating in this project, from grandparents, a conscious grandparenting, to consciousness throughout the gestation period as well.
Nice.
And I think that's important, not to leave that out. Yeah.
I don't know if you plan to involve David Rico in any of this, but his book, How to Be an Adult, has a lot about childhood wounds,
mm-hmm.
and the wounds that all of us suffer in some degree or another in mm-hmm. our childhood, and how to come to terms with those in your own life as an mm-hmm. adult, mm-hmm. which might be useful.
Got it. Actually, one of the people that I was thinking of was John Wellwood, that Stuart and I had a conversation
okay.
with,
nice.
Conversation on the radio, I mean, who has also a wonderful book about that very topic. And he's quite well known author and also local. Local person. So, anyway, we'll see. We don't know yet.
Just
I mean, we're first trying to setting the. Thank you for the idea. And we're first trying to get. We need to settle on our venue, which we're working on. Just FYI for folks here, we're hoping to get the Sonoma Country Day School with the Jackson Theater
as a venue,
because it has the wonderful amphitheater auditorium. For the big speakers, and then it has all these classrooms and a few medium-sized venues like a gymnasium and a library and stuff like that, where breakout groups could happen. So that it's not confirmed by any means. So it's don't take it as a done deal by any means. But we're hoping for that or something like that as a venue for this event. And we're going to be pursuing getting funding, securing some funding from at least a few people that we have some connections to help get some seed money for the event as well. But the main thing that in this connection that I'll mention is this July 15th meeting. We really want and request and solicit your participation in this July 15th meeting from Sunday from 2 to 6 p.m. That it would be really fantastic. And, you know, we've just recently sent out an email letter to spiritual practitioners throughout the area that we're in contact with, but if you weren't on that list and didn't receive that email, by all means let me know and give me your email, and I'll send that to you. You can forward it to your friends, and we want to get as many folks there as possible. We have a process that we'll be going through to create conversations around specific topics. To actually make this thing happen in a very coherent and successful way, and so I solicit your participation and support, because that will be crucial. It's not Danielle and Stuart and I are on the steering committee, executive steering committee, but it can't just be us. We need a lot more assistance. So, other comments or questions? Michael?
Are you familiar with Auroville?
Say the name.
Are you familiar with Auroville?
Auroville, no.
Auroville.
Auroville?
The Aurobindo.
Oh, Auroville. Right, sorry, that's how I would say it.
Auroville.
I know of it, I've never been to it.
Because it originally took form around the philosophy of childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the early quotes from their journal, that was my first experience of getting published was in their journal many years ago. Was children need to be protected from the slowness, the ignorance, and the rapacity of adults.
Mm-hmm.
We should have the grace to concede to them the immunity of a territory which belongs by right to their embassy of the future. So one of my great concerns has to do with children having a sense of their own territory, and that they're not kind of cohabiting in their parents' space.
Mm-hmm.
And and moving, having the sense of being complete and whole as they are,
mm-hmm.
and that they don't have to become something else in order to belong.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the point. I don't know if you were here when I was making this point, but that is indeed one of the principles of conscious parenting, as I would articulate it, and as articulated in that book, Conscious Parenting, by Lee Loswick over there, and furthermore, I haven't really talked about this part of it yet, but for a child to be whole and complete, in my view, and in Mr. Loswick's view, and my teacher's view, it is necessary for adults to, as I would put it, create space for the children to find their own, to express their own natural creativity, without it being constrained in the way that you were just describing. I mean, so many people. So many parents automatically assume, because that's how they were treated, that they're supposed to become clones in some way, shape, or form of the family that they grew up in. Or, you know, it happens in other contexts too. I mean, in places like graduate school, you know, graduate students are often expected to become clones of their mentors. It gets reproduced throughout society. And to me, conscious parenting is authentic. To be authentic, must have that spaciousness in the adults around children, such that children are not just allowed to do the things that they feel impelled to do, but they are even assisted and enabled in doing those things. And there are educational programs. I mean, there's a school right across the street that has that certainly as one of its primary. You know, the whole anthroposophical Waldorf tradition, and others, and you know, there are other educational philosophies that attempt to enact this as well. But this foundation of not having it questioned, that the child is whole, perfect, and complete as she or he is from the beginning, no matter what they say or do, is the way to create adults who have the power to change the world in generous, loving, and exuberant ways that otherwise tend to get squelched and come out in narrower channels. As we've experienced, certainly as I've experienced it, and I've seen others experience it in their lives. So conscious parenting then becomes this process by which we examine in ourselves the obstacles. It's not that we just have the idea of being more generous and loving adults around kids and other adults, but we actually look at and make commitment to a plan of action or a program, or which is why we're bringing in all these meditative techniques, why spiritual practitioners are at the heart of this Festival of Conscious Parenting program, because they have experience with bringing a plan of action through some commitment to self-examination of whatever form.
Yeah.
please. I know you can say it much more eloquently than I.
I was going to move to elaborate on that topic.
Please.
Which I wanted to speak, what came up when you guys were talking about that was a idea around methodology. And partly this is informed because before coming here, I spent the day in a business context leading a seminar on this notion of three laws of performance, which is a sort of a way of taking certain spiritual ideas and applying them in a business context. But the first law of performance is that people behave or people perform in correlation to how a situation occurs to them. And what that means in this context is that sometimes, you know, the methodology of having a conference and having a conversation actually can have a big impact. You know, we can talk about meditative techniques and things like that, but just shifting the way in which the whole question occurs to people can have a profound transformative effect on how people relate to their children. So, like the point that you were making, that, you know, seeing a child as whole and complete and a being unto themselves may be something that people coming from ordinary experience don't have access to, but a conversation that begins to awaken that possibility causes people to see the child differently. And when they see the child differently, they don't even have to. They don't have to set about with a you know, a detailed sadhana in order to start to, you know, meditate every day in order to deal with their children differently. The very fact that they see their child differently will transform the way in which they relate to the child, and that's why this is it's powerful to have this kind of conversation. You know, we believe fully, you know, that it's great if people follow on, deepen their work, deepen their practice, bring their spiritual practice to their child raising. But someone doesn't even have to be a dedicated spiritual practitioner to be awakened to the possibility that their child is a being that exists very differently than the way that they were conditioned to think. And just by awakening that possibility that there's a different way of seeing a child, seeing a child as a being that you have a responsibility for providing for a period of time, but not a obligation to imprint, is a radical shift. But when someone just holds that seeing and begins to relate to that seeing, then their behavior changes naturally, instinctively. And that's the power of having this kind of conversation. It's not, you know, we don't even... you know, practical techniques are great. Explicit relationships with spiritual topics are important, but just talking about the subject actually creates change, and that's the power, and that's why it's also powerful and important for, you know, everyone to participate in the festival, to make it a festival, because the more people that hear this, the more people who talk about this, the more people that are inspired by the possibility that one can relate to one's children as though they were whole and complete and beings that we have a sacred trust to foster into the world, it will create difference. It'll create changes and start to change the society. You know, another aspect of this that's so compelling is that, you know, sometimes as spiritual teachers, you know, it's you know, you have some leverage with adults in terms of practices and things like that, and teaching methods and perspectives and insights. But the greatest leverage we have in terms of transforming our society is by providing for allowing space for children to arise as the beings that they are in as low a distorted space as possible, so that they can inherit the world in a way that has a more positive relationship, and that's big. I mean, that's I think teachers teachers who teach children understand this, and you know, that's one of the that's true. Some of them. I mean, I think for on the positive side, I think that's what keeps teachers going, because they realize the impact that they have not only on the kids themselves, but the impact on the kids is an impact on a whole network of people. For a lifetime, and that's the impact that this Festival for Conscious Parenting can have. It can touch lives undreamed of yet by just making the conversation available and accessible to people.
Yeah, at this point, I know that more than 1,000 people will have seen the phrase Festival of Conscious Parenting. At least 1,000, maybe more, maybe thousands, plural, because we have we've just sent out an email to over 1,000 people about this talk. I've sent out however many emails I've sent out. Danielle and other members of the steering committee have sent out stuff to their.
And let's not forget Facebook.
I was not done. Stuart's making this point because I have been a Facebook fuddy-duddy, which just that phrase makes me a fuddy-duddy
But that's changing.
Stuart insists that that's changing.
No, I think
by the time it changes fully, Facebook will be obsolete.
Have you heard of baby sign?
No. Baby sign?
Baby sign, yeah.
What is it?
Oh, they teach sign language to children before they can talk.
I have heard of that. Yeah, I
didn't hear it in that name.
Children can learn like up to 100 hand gestures, mm-hmm. hand signs, before they're able
right.
to talk.
Yeah,
so they're able to communicate earlier, so you know what their needs
absolutely.
Are, right?
Absolutely, and that's
right.
I think that's a big part of the wound that we all carry with us. It has to do with moving into a world where everyone is relating conceptually in ways that we cannot relate to, and so we feel essentially left, cut off, excluded.
Yeah,
and I'm wondering, what are the grown-ups talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember pre-verbal, and that experience, and wondering if I would ever be able to talk to another person like that, and suddenly there would be something going on between the two of you in this whole different space, this whole different realm. To me, a big part of the story has to do with the way that speech is introduced into the lives of children.
Thank you for sharing that. My teacher used to say that. In fact, he's in that. I think, yeah, The Way of Tao is over there on the table there. In that booklet, the way he describes it is that language is a two-edged sword. That children are motivated to learn language because they want to communicate their needs to the people around them. But what they find is that then they are subject to being told what to do by those people. So instead of it working out in the way that would have seemed natural to the children.
What about my needs?
Yeah, right. It turns out that the adults have all these requirements of the children, and that's actually part of based on his experience as a nanny, which I think you weren't here for the discussion of Michael. My teacher's spiritual training. Was in large part informed by his training as the nanny for the children of his three oldest children of his spiritual teacher, and so he used to say that children should start off as kings and queens, and then around age 2 or 3 they get demoted to princes and princesses. And then around age 5, it's dukes and duchesses and et cetera down the line until eventually they're knaves as adults, starting off as adults. The idea here being that we treat these beings as because they don't have they're only developing the resources to interact with the material world at those young ages. As their bodies are still developing, their minds are literally still wiring themselves. that we create contexts where we recognize that they need help in articulating their relationship with the universe. But as time goes on, they acquire the ability to exercise their own responsibility more and more and more. And that's another way, and that's the metaphor, that's part of what the metaphor that he was using describes there. But it is in substantial part a shock, to get back to the point I was making in response to what you said, Michael. It's a shock to be told what to do when you thought you were going to be able to communicate what you wanted to these powerful caregiving beings around you. So the love that parents have for kids and other adults have for kids gets redirected and misdirected in some ways by the habits that we pick up through our own childhood. And spiritual practice is in many ways a remediation of those habits and that impression food that we received as we were kids. It's a way to examine who we really are, basically, to get back to to create through interrogation a relationship internally to our own deepest, truest selves or impulses, or however you want to put it, such that we can then be innocent again, or as Robert Owen used to put it, innocent with knowledge, as opposed to the sheer innocence of children. So to give impression food to children, to innocent children, such that they can become innocent with knowledge without having to go through a descent into the various hells that we experience along the way is a tremendous challenge and responsibility. And that's why we want to bring everything we know about how to do that to the table at this Festival of Conscious Parenting. That's why we need all these people from all these different, with all these different experiences and techniques and ideas to come together, because, you know, your point is that people are coming from different places, and exactly so. And when they're coming from different places, they need different things, not just, you know, one size won't fit all. Daniel.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what's really important about this is it's not the idea of keeping the children or the young people, you know, from babies up, protected, you know. So it's like, and when, excuse my language, but when shit hits the fan for the children, that they have a presence and tools and the support of the loving adults, that they can deal with it, you know, because we can't protect everybody forever, you know. I mean, in a way, you're saying that the remedial, that so much of us need to do remedial work. You didn't use that word, though, but and it struck me as like, well, I guess that's what I would call life, you know. It's sort of a, you know, I mean, I'm not speaking remedial for the next life, because I don't want to go there. But I find that the most critical thing is the capacity when things go berserk, or, you know, when the catastrophe falls, you know, that the children or the adult will have some kind of presence and some kind of presence and being to do something that could be quite appropriate, and maybe won't prevent the person from experiencing some kind of suffering, but won't destroy the person. You know?
Right. Thank you. That's such an important point and so crucial because there are so many people who, when they hit life's shoals, they just collapse, they sink or they retreat. And in the many ways that it's possible to do that, whether it's through suicide or alcohol and drugs or contracting into a shell in whatever way, shape, or form that happens, and when this in this early period of development, children have this essentially unshakable experience and conviction of being loved for who they are, fundamentally, as whole and complete. Then when those things happen, as you are pointing out, then they can respond creatively and appropriately, you know, in ways that people who don't have that foundation have difficulty doing.
Yeah, it's inevitable that the child is going to meet other children and other adults who will reject them, mm-hmm. who will shame them, who will wound them.
Sure.
And if they have
the kids
can't protect
are
them from that. But as a loving parent, you can be the shelter that they come back to, and if you the lines of communication are open, you can talk to them about this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I even think that using the language I was using earlier, you know, that if a child has received loving affirmation in the critical early years, and their orientation towards the universe is that the universe loves them, then the ways that one of those traumatic experiences arises for them is very different than someone who has negation of that.
Yeah, it'll be an aberration rather than something that you can expect all the time.
Right. Or if there's confusion, at least there's maybe openness to talk about it, and in which case, as a parent, you can provide some sort of support, but it doesn't shake their earth view, whereas for other children, it confirms everything they've always known, or it seems to. And it could be this, you know, it could be the same fact, the same event, will have a very different arising for someone who's has the foundation that a loving parenting has provided versus someone who doesn't.
Well, I was thinking too that, again, going back to my own experience, but that what I'm connecting here is that it can be transformational for the parent as well.
Yes.
And I'll share just that when my daughter was maybe 5 or 6 years old, and I was sitting with a group of women, a spiritual group of women, not a religion, but a spiritual group, and I was talking with them, sharing about how I was having difficulty relating to my daughter because she was so different than me, totally different, so, you know, so in myriads of ways. And so one of the women turned and said to me, well, that could be something to celebrate. And it was, you know, it was the perfect thing to say, because then it got me really thinking about how I could not view that as a separation, but as something to be joyous about, something to celebrate. The difference, the wonderful personality and character and things that weren't like me, how fabulous. And it really it changed the whole way that I looked at and felt toward my daughter. So that's just a small thing, but
talking about it, having someone say something.
Really, just one person just started the wheels turning, and it really made a change for me, and I think it was a big change for her too.
That's wonderful. I mean, that's just like we were talking about earlier, that having the conversation creates a
exactly.
It's precise. I mean, what you're describing is precisely what we hope to create in the Festival for Conscious Parenting, are conversations exactly like that at every level, from major speakers to focused workshops to casual conversations between participants. Mm-hmm. It's like it can have that kind of transformative effect. And what you identified is very is wonderfully stated, because like the key word is that is transformation. Transformation is when we willingly drop a perspective that is somewhat limiting, mm-hmm. and are willing to take on a perspective that suddenly creates an opportunity that wasn't there before, which mm-hmm. was a new kind of relationship with your daughter. And then your actions completely, changed as a result of that.
It did, forevermore.
Yeah.
Well, what it sounds like happened is that you, instead of having a barrier between you and your mm-hmm. daughter, suddenly mm-hmm. it was a bigger, you could be bigger because your daughter is this different person. And mm-hmm. and that made you bigger. That's another definition of transformation.
Yeah, I never thought of it like that. I just felt like it was very freeing.
Yeah.
And I just felt so much freer. And
and that's exactly as you're saying. I mean, you're like giving exactly the vision behind this conference. And the Festival of Conscious Parenting is to make that kind of freedom available to as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. And you know from your own experience that just like that, all of a sudden there's a transformation that's possible.
And you don't know when that's going to happen.
Right.
And I think to be among people who you feel you can trust to be honest or to talk about mm-hmm. what's on your heart, it's really important.
Yeah, you created the conditions by which that transformation was possible, because you put yourself in a situation where there was people
Some
who were having that kind of conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, it's like our teacher used to say, you can't make the lightning strike, but you can, you can climb on top of the mountain with a lightning rod and stand there in a thunderstorm, and then a bolt hits and, something shifts.
Right.
Yeah. My teacher used to say, for that same sort of metaphor, the wakening up or the enlightenment, that it's an accident, but practice makes you accident prone.
Yeah,
that's right. That's right. So these conversations that of which this is an example, we hope will culminate in this event next year, and who knows what conversations after that. But that's why we're here today, tonight, is to start this, keep this conversational ball rolling.
To promote the seed meeting that is happening on the 15th, and to invite you all to participate, and to invite you to share the participation with people you think would be interested, mm-hmm. and participate in making the festival itself happen. And from that, there's all sorts of possibilities. Maybe it becomes an annual event. Maybe it takes on a momentum. Maybe it gets bigger than we expected.
Maybe
we don't know yet.
It gets repeated in other parts of the country.
Yeah, but it's like creating that conversation is a wonderful possibility. It makes something available that in a focused way. And I think you articulated it wonderfully earlier, that there was a time where you just didn't know where to go for that kind of thing, if you were so inclined, and we at least wanted to have a neon sign out there saying Festival of Conscious Parenting, so that people who are drawn or touched by that have the possibility of putting themselves in a place where that kind of transformation can take place.
So we have some. I have some posters, some invitation letters over on the counter for the seed meeting coming up July 15th. And also, if you don't know the directions to the location, Taiyu House, then there's some directions to the side as well. We have just apparently set up, although I didn't have a chance to.